Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site.
And quick,
Motor Status,
Evander,
Tony Keel,
with guest co-host Oscar Elohim Velzi.
I'm Dale Kent, designer of The Road to War, and like me, you're listening to Polycast, the official podcast of the Poulton Civilization site.
This is episode 30.
Do I have to do anything special with the configuration here, or...?
Yeah, you could do some things with your configuration, but it's not necessary, so yeah, we'll just hit record. We'll just press the red record button.
Big, shiny red record button.
Yes, very shiny.
It's not shiny.
All right, Oscar, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Kind of pale. Oh, if I touch it, it shines a little.
Yes, see, you move your mouse over, then it shines.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, my God, I'm blinded.
Do not look directly at the button.
In the news, we revisit the tech tree for Galactic Civilizations 2.
Modcast today, some religions may be founded too late, and to barb or not to barb, that is the question.
In the workshop, unit modeling and the status of the Second Revolution mod.
In the Senate today, we discuss Code of Laws technology. Is it overrated or underrated? And civics choices for space race victory.
Then another two Senate topics, these from the Vault. First, reference for starting out with a scout or warrior in Civ 4. And then, 19 episodes later is better than never. At last, the promised 5 worst wonders of the world list compiled pre-Beyond the Sword.
Today in Mailbag, we had a report that Civ 3 Conquest wasn't working at Vista due to a font problem. And we also gave a solution for it.
News. Just revisiting Galactic Civilizations to Dreadlord's technology tree in the next expansion.
What are they doing to the technology tree again, besides just having different ones for different races? Well, they're going to scramble it all up?
Yeah. No, I think it's that different tech trees for different races. It's a pretty big deal, I think.
Well, that'll be actually kind of cool. I always had trouble with Dreadlords getting spanked by whatever those bastard alien tough ones are. I can't remember, but I remember being real ticked off about it.
Tony, this is a family-friendly show.
Oh. I've been spanked in only the healthiest of ways.
Well, you know, when they say different technology trees, though, what do they really mean? Is it a whole technology tree from scratch with a whole set of technologies? It couldn't be that much. Probably going to be, okay, you guys get this tech in addition to the tech tree, and you guys get this thing, and it's basically the same tech tree.
No, it's supposed to be completely different trees. So.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it seems a lot of work to me.
I'll believe it when I see it.
What I want to know, when you do customized Civ and Galactic Civ, and you make your own from scratch, how does it determine which tech tree you get?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Is it by the picture you use?
Maybe you can just pick that as another parameter.
Ever since Masters of Orion 2, I've always liked to play the custom Civ for the Space Empires.
Yeah, when I play Masters of Orion 1, my favorites are the bird guys, the Alcari, I believe, yeah, and the lizard guys, and the bear guys. I'm playing a nice game with them mauling up everyone. And who else is good? Oh, and the insect guys.
Gotta love the insect guys.
Oh, for some reason, I always play human in everything. I don't know.
You're xenophobic.
Human lover. Down with the humans.
Human.
In this interview on GameSpot, Brad says that having unique technology trees for civilizations opens the door to some spectacular new styles of gameplay. For example, the evil Drengen Empire has a technology called compulsory labor, which, when researched, lets the Drengen build slave pits on their world for better production. But if such a world gets liberated, the slave pits are still there, leading to a moral quandary for the conqueror. Keep the slave pits, or spend the money to replace them with normal factories, or something else.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool.
We've talked before about giving players choices and how many choices are too many choices, and don't just add choices for choices' sakes, but that sounds like an interesting choice.
adding replay value doesn't really come into that choices scheme, because each tech tree is the set of choices and encourages people to keep playing the game and buying expansions.
You know what I would really like to see, though, is that instead of just having the tech trees be different, there's a whole set of very, very different technologies. So, say it would go all the way down to things like, these guys have engines on their spaceships and they jump instantly from one point to another, and these guys have solar sails, and these guys have warp drives, and these guys have nuclear engines, and things like this, and be very, very different, so that even just the very structure of the game, how you move your ships around, how your shields absorb damage, how your weapons shoot, would be completely different.
That would be cool.
Oh, well, Brad does say that the addition of the different technology trees with this second expansion, each race also has corresponding unique weapons, defenses, and planetary improvements.
Oh, that does sound nice.
Now, just how extensive those unique weapons, defenses, and planetary improvements are, how differentiated they are,
yeah,
remains to be seen.
Enemies are like, ooh, we have green lasers versus your blue lasers, you know.
Well, now, Ken, how are you supposed to tell your friends and enemies apart if you don't have those distinctions like that?
Good point. You know? It's like, Captain, shoot the guys with the green laser.
Then you get so many races in the game and they start running out of color, so it's, no, they have the dark green lasers. We have the light green lasers. Oh, no.
So the pink ones.
No, those magenta lasers are our allies. You idiots.
Is that sky blue or ocean blue? Oh, no.
Then the stealthy race comes along with black lasers, and you can't even see them.
Oh, multicolored lasers. Are we the red and blue, or are we the red and green? Oh, I don't remember anymore.
The rainbow blade.
Oh, no, they've gone plaid.
At which point, there is no more sequels to Galsif, because they've killed the franchise.
Oh, no.
One thing I liked what they did in Dark Avatar is how they streamlined the tech tree, removing those big lines of laser 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and all that, and replace it with one laser technology with different milestones. It was much better for the eye, at least.
I haven't played Dark Avatar yet. I've only played Dreadlords. I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
I want to go to the end of the line, and it was laser 1, 2, 3, 4, and on, and on, and on.
It sure sounds like these Bardock guys do change a lot of the core mechanics of their games with each expansion pack.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing their jobs the best they can. I think they have nothing but room for improvement as far as I see, and I think there never should be a time you stop improving a game, you know?
That's a pretty loaded statement. Nothing but room for improvement? Sounds like you're saying it's crap.
only in the nicest way.
Yeah, I really like how they support the game.
Yeah.
And how they treat the customer.
Interesting, Tony. You said in the nicest way, both in relation to improvements to the game as well as spanking.
He's just a nice guy.
Oh, boy. Me and my big mouth.
When's this thing coming out again, this expansion pack?
Next month.
Oh, really?
Yeah, November.
I might give it a try if I ever get Windows working again.
So this is never?
Yeah, well, this way. They have a version for Linux? I hope they do.
Microsoft, if you don't like these disparaging comments about your operating system on this show, sponsor us. Contact.
Wait a sec. This may not be the best deal after all.
Or just to us.
No.
The opinions of Ken do not necessarily reflect.
Well, you can't fuck an empty chicken.
That was some strange European expression.
We have robots to pluck them in America.
Coming soon to Galsif 2, Diet Death Robots That Pluck Chickens. Wait, what?
Well, there is a Death Star, no?
Yes, the Death Star knockoff.
Like the one in Star Wars.
Or in Masters of Orion 2.
And what was the name they chose for it? Terrorsphere? Doomball?
Terror Star? Terror something.
Yeah.
Giant Bad Ball? I don't know.
Death Nipple.
Are you in marketing, Ken?
Please never make a sci-fi mod, Ken.
Giant Kurt Ball. And Tony, family show, family show. You thought you were going to say goodbye.
Oh, come on. No one heard anything.
Got news? Email news@bolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Snoopy 369, Alexander I, or Illuminatus via Bolton's forums at bolton.net/forums.
Shall we move to the modcast now?
Okay.
Welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about various hot topics on all the different forums that talk about Sue.
Even post Beyond the Sword, this WTPC0 holds that those religions founded early are still too darn dominant, particularly in single player, where humans don't beeline for some and the AI tends to found them very late. The earlier founded ones have widely spread and adopted, and we can extend that to the newer religions finding it hard to spread themselves, let alone be adopted. Especially, says Sarius on Pangaeas, where early religion has the opportunity to spread like wildfire very early on. So to this end, WTBC0, and no, I will not try to say that three times fast, proposes four possible solutions. Allow philosophy to be researched once you have aesthetics, so you don't need to research drama. Of course, this one would require Beyond the Sword, because that's when aesthetics was introduced. Reduce philosophy's technology costs, suggesting going down from 800 beakers to 700, but that's just a base debating point for game balancing discussion. Reduce theology's technology cost, but is unsure what beaker value to even suggest, since this technology enables the theocracy civic. Theology's currently at 500 beakers. And reduce divine rights tech costs to a suggestion of 1,000 beakers from 1,200, and also remove the requirement to have theology before this technology can be researched, so it would only require monarchy, and monarchy itself requires 300 beakers.
Way too early.
You know, I think that they placed the religions in the tech tree to emulate the series of their discovery throughout our history, but I think that that's a waste of time, because what if I'm playing USA in the beginning and I start off Hindu the whole game? There's no reason to have, if you're not going to balance that, you know?
I think they just need to mod the spread factors for the later religions to the point where they'll catch up. And in the versions of, when you're playing with the, you get to pick whatever your religion you want, they'll have it automatically done. So first religion founding gets a spread factor of a low number, and then it just increases sequentially. So the last religion founded, whatever it may be, since they're random at that point, just gets the highest spread factor. So they balance out, and by the end of the game, you have a good balance of religions.
That's good.
Yeah, it is.
Time Traveler suggests where we have a technology already in the technology tree that allows us to found a religion, whether it's we can choose because we're playing Beyond the Sword or before then, it's a set one. He suggests that when the first civilization that discovers this technology gets one religion, but then the next civilization that discovers that technology also gets to found a religion.
Well, then everyone would found a religion when they got there, right? There'd only be one religion-founding tech in the whole game? What do you say?
That could be a problem, because then, you're not going to need as many technologies then in order to prompt you to found a religion. But I think he's arguing that because you would have, like, an earlier technology that allows you right now to found a religion if you're the first one, well, that same early technology then, if you're the second person there, you can found religion as well. So then that way, all the religions will be founded earlier on in the game, because you would only have to get to an earlier technology, and you would have kind of a second chance. You wouldn't have to be the first person. Second place would also get a crack at founding a religion.
Oh, no, it takes away the whole get there first, me, winner take all approach, which is vital to Civ.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's like, why would I rush to technologies if there wasn't this big I get it first reward? It's like wonders.
I think that Beyond the Sword's addition of choose your own religion when you found one, I think that was the biggest upgrade to the standard religion system. I just find it unfortunate that it's in that really obscure options list in your custom game instead of being a main feature of the settings of a normal game.
Well, heck, you probably wanted it to be the default setting, didn't you?
Little bit, but see, then again, it takes from the guys who are history nuts who enjoy Hinduism and Buddhism being so ancient.
I never hear anyone say that, actually. People, damn, there's too much Hinduism and Buddhism in the game.
Well, since that option exists, but it's not required, you can either have it or not, then I guess you're pleasing everyone a little bit at a compromise.
Yeah, I mean, I think the current system with now you can pick your own religion, I think it basically works fine. You might be able to tweak things a little bit, but I don't see the need to have all seven religions being dominant in every game. And if you play on a continent map or something like that, I mean, it's quite common that on your particular continent, nobody gets to found one of the early three religions, and by definition, one of the newer religions does get to be very dominant, at least on your continent. So I've had games in which the fifth or sixth religion became very big. Not every game, and certainly not on Pangaea. It depends on the map type and stuff like that, but I think that's fine. As long as not every time Buddhism, every time Hinduism, I'm fine with the system as it is.
You know, to make a point on what you just said, I've had some continent games where Buddhism or Hinduism, for instance, the early religions have hopped the ocean. Somehow, I think they should add some code that prevents spread of religion over continents until astronomy or something is researched.
I think that was a bug, and I think I wrote it.
Yeah, you would think that also, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember a mod I made with the... I was trying to do something else, and I accidentally caused religions to jump over between continents that had no contact in them at all.
It's your fault.
Yeah, that was all my fault.
Ken admits it and is looking for forgiveness. Do you forgive him, Tony?
All right.
No, I've never seen that.
It happened to me, actually. That's weird. This was Warlords, though.
Because I specifically remember that happening.
Ursus is suggesting that with the seventh religion being founded specifically, that they get their holy shrine built automatically with its founding. I'm not liking that idea.
Maybe it's cheaper or something like that to balance it, but...
You could give them two missionaries, you know.
You like that idea, extra missionaries.
Or maybe a higher missionary limit.
No, I was thinking three. Instead of just having one, have three. Keep the in-game simultaneous max there, but have three.
Maybe like do it like the max is equal to the order of the religion. First religion, one max, missionary, one max missionary, two, all the way up to seven, so that last religion can spread like wildfire.
The later religions are the only ones that give you a bonus a missionary when they're founded. The early ones don't.
It's just one missionary. Now, there's a guy here in the thread, Coeur de Leon.
I think it's Cordelian.
He says, have religions founded by prophets instead. And I'm like, that's a good idea. Tricky to implement, possibly, but it could work.
Oh, as an extra prophet ability, yeah.
Yeah, because first it shifts the likely focus of having more religions being able to be founded earlier on. You don't have a better chance of spreading.
Problem then becomes it's quite hard to get a prophet if you don't have a religion.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pretty much have to build a wonder of some sort to get...
Yeah, would an 11... If great prophets are what are required to found religions, saying here, players would be even more likely to beeline for technology that gives them access to early wonders that carry the great prophet points with them. You know, hello, Stonehenge, you know, particularly now, post Beyond the Star with its later obsolescence with astronomy than calendar, and perhaps even more so the Oracle, which, as we know, does not expire at all. Perhaps what you could do... Either increase the great profit points in the wonders, or perhaps nominally with a couple of early buildings like the monument, you could give them the possibility for some great people points. Essentially, I think it's if you decide great profits are now going to found religion, there is some additional game balancing that you're going to need to do. I like the idea too, but if it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah, you definitely need something because I think just having everyone be able to found one religion for one profit right at the beginning of the game, you'd get them all too early. Everyone would get a prophet.
Yeah.
Everyone would have a religion before we usually see half the religions founded right now. You'd have everything maxed out.
Yeah, from a realism point of view, it does make sense. But from a gameplay point of view, it's problematic. Particularly what Ken says. You get all the religions in the first 100 turns of the games or so. And that's not quite what you want either, I think.
Maybe they could spin it the way they do with Golden Ages.
You want some spread.
So it's like the first one you'd have to have one prophet, and then you have to have two prophets, and then three prophets, and that would actually take a long time. People would have to save up the prophets for ages.
Yeah, but then it's maybe not worthwhile anymore, especially not after the third religion.
Yeah.
I think that tweaking the spread rates of the later religions is the best idea.
Yeah.
To spread much faster.
And that's an XML mod. That's easy.
Well, yeah, if you use the hard-coded order than normal game, but you'd have to do something tricky for Beyond the Sword, where it dynamically changed it based on what you selected.
No, that Beyond the Sword looks at the starting tech, not at the name of the religion.
Oh, okay. So it does change it automatically.
Because I have found that something like Judaism with a late tech, and it had a higher spread rate than it would have had as an early tech.
Oh.
And you did get the missionary and all that stuff, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the spread rate itself is a relatively easy change, plus also what else has to be changed gameplay-wise, if anything, is also minimal.
Yeah. Every solution you can come up with has a lot of problems with it, and if you just tweak the spread rate a little bit and maybe give the last religion one or two extra missionaries, I think that's the most elegant solution.
Speaking of problematic solutions, LDC again, however you pronounce that. LDCere? I don't know. That was an attempt.
LDCesare.
I was closer than the first time, not that that's saying much. Suggest permitting later founded religions to overcome older ones by destroying them in the process and would require the ousted religion to send a missionary to possibly even be allowed back in.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's not good. That happens in real life, but we don't like to admit it, so.
Even if I were to accept that notion of the idea in the game, which I don't, why couldn't then the older ones spread back and possibly push the newer ones out, even in cities where they previously didn't have a presence? So,
War!
I can possibly see something like that as an option. Say you have one state religion, and you found another religion, and you, like, have a schism with the old religion, and some of it converts your old religion into your new religion to kind of get it going faster.
That might sound like an interesting scenario, but I'm not sure I'd want that in the game otherwise.
Religious persecution is very ugly, and I wouldn't want to have to see it every time I play the game.
Yeah, well, you can use the same argument to say, well, war is ugly, so we shouldn't have that in the game either.
No, war is fun.
No, I think the biggest problem here is the lack of control. I mean, if you work very hard to get your religion spread all over the map, and suddenly you lose half the places where you founded it, that's not a lot of fun.
Or slightly a man then to suggest certain religions competing with certain others and actually goes to name specific religions competing with certain others.
Oh, no.
That's just making a bad idea worse.
Yep. I've gone into the scary zone.
Yeah.
Polycast is a scary zone, Tony. I thought you knew that by now.
Oh, I'm learning so slowly.
To barb or not to barb? That is the question.
I like barbarians.
I've been always playing with barbarians on since the Great Wall came out. It's just too strong a wonder not to have them turned on.
This user in question, Sonneji Sonny, he has barbarians enabled, and although he finds the tax annoying, it's a hell of a lot more realistic in the early years as compared to not having them. He also argues that capturing barbarian cities can save on production. I think there's an important word, can.
Yeah, I just go with the regular barbarian settings, but occasionally I just have these games where I am being swamped by them. I think it's got something to do with the random numbers generators and the rest of the map being filled out, and I've still got some space near me that's unexplored. But they're just coming at me from every angle, and I'm building and building and building defenses, and it's all I can do just to hold them off, and even then...
Well, you can dispel the fog, and they don't come near.
Yeah, I can't even get there to explore the fog. I mean, I'm just to hold them off.
I think that's something to do with Axemen. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's the Axemen coming at me, yeah. I don't have any trouble with warriors.
A well-upgraded archer, if you have two per city, at least with one with city defense, I noticed that if they're fully healed, they take the Axemen almost every time. Especially if you build on hills.
Yes, but it's run like three Axemen at a time.
Oh, God, I've played those games. I usually just quit them.
Also, the problem is destruction of the improvements and the killing of workers, for example.
Exactly.
The barbarian is running around and you can improve your land and they even destroy it. But I like them. It makes the world feel more alive.
Yeah.
Personally, I would like to see them evolve into minor cities or something like that.
That would be cool.
Yeah. About the time when they get railroads, they should, you know, finally become a civilization.
Yeah, if they've managed to hold on for that long and they've got some cities.
Yeah, so, hey guys, we're size 26 city now. We really ought to, like, give ourselves a name.
I go for 26ers. Woo, 26ers.
Okay. We lost a population point. Oh, crap. The name's not good anymore.
Oh, no. We're now the civilization formerly known as the 26ers. Woo! Yeah, like, can I play with barbarians on, but not raging barbarians?
No.
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 No?
No.
I always play with raging barbarians. It's fun. I mean, otherwise, it's just free XP points and not much of a challenge there.
It's a little masochistic, but...
Free XP! Woo!
Yeah, woo!
Oh, so well, I guess to each their own.
Quote of the thread.
Yeah, exactly.
Sword of Striker. I only play with raging barbarians. Anything less would be uncivilized. No.
Yeah, I do wish, though, that the barbarian setting was adjustable in the normal choices when you start a game.
A few more options would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when you select your world size and your speeds and all those things, and it's like, they used to have an option there where it was right in there at the beginning. Timid barbarians, barbarians with pillows, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I know Call to Power had 4 or 5 options.
Yeah, and Smack had, like, prolific native life form, stuff like that.
There's another fungus or worm.
Prolific. Hey, Ken, this is a family-friendly show.
Oh, God. I would like to see a very limited form of diplomacy available for barbarians. Like, maybe if you pay them a crap load of money, like in Civ 2, they leave you alone, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you literally pay through the nose, and they'll go back for a while and come back another day, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. That
pretty
was kind
of
yeah.
accurate. That is what they did most of the time.
It was a nice touch in Civ 2.
Yeah, and in Civ Rev, you're going to be able to talk to the barbarians.
Woohoo! Yay!
Sick.
No.
Click no.
Grunt at you. Grunt. You know, money now, or sex.
Bar.
Village.
In the workshop, we play with Creative Game Works.
What I don't like about some of the tanks that were out is some of them I actually had to reanimate because the guy who made it just made it a bunch of artifacts and polys just kind of loosely floating together, and I had to actually go in and re-bone the darn thing. Oh, it was pain.
Tanks have bones?
Oh, they actually do. They have a turret bone and a body bone. It just has to do with the way they structure the animations in the model. Like, an infantry has a lot more bones than a tank or an airplane. An airplane has very few.
Hope so. Yeah, so I guess when they do the little turret explosion, the turret pops off, that's got to be a separate bone to do that.
Exactly. And when you learn the reanimating method where you can take a different infantry unit, for instance, when I took a scout and put him on a chariot to make a Native American on a chariot, I reboned that scout to the chariot driver. But I also managed to apply this after many horrible glitches. I managed to apply this to mechanized units. It's just good for getting animations onto maybe units that didn't have any animations at all, you know? It's a lengthy NIF viewer process for the most part.
Yeah. No, personally, I don't do much modeling. But I model a banner. A flag banner the other day, and it was, I felt very happy. But
well, you model more than me. I actually, most of what I do is manipulate models that are already made. I have trouble fabricating models from scratch. I still just don't know enough.
It's what I did. It's a very simple thing. The basic shapes and a cube, a couple of tubes, and, well, with a nice texture, they look nice. I have the detail by... My texturing, always.
Yeah, I had trouble figuring out how to skin a model, because I love making textures. I just couldn't figure out how to put a skin onto the model. It was mind-boggling.
In 3DS, it's a wrap UBM. I use that all the time. So, Tony, what are you doing right now? Not right now, but with modding.
I had a data crash on Second Revolution. So I'm taking a break, and I'm playing Half-Life 2 Orange Box.
Oh, cool.
I was done with the map of placing all the cities on North America and whatnot, and lo and behold, I uninstall Civ because I had some data problems and reinstall it, and it wiped out my backup of the file, and I cussed for about a half an hour and then just said, nope, taking a break.
I mean, it's not all of Second Revolution, or is it just all you've done since the last time you'd updated it?
I didn't lose any of the mod. I had the map just started. All I have now is the map with the capital cities. I had the map completely populated with cities.
Oh,
and it was about to move on to buildings and units, and it would have been released by now, but, ugh.
Yeah, that's what good version control software is good for.
Oh, you want to hear some salt in the wound? I went and downloaded a deleted file recovery program.
Yeah.
And the first one I downloaded discovered it right away, something that would have helped. And when I tried to recover it, it asked me for money. And then when I finally got a freeware going, that when I downloaded a freeware one, it had already overwritten the file by downloading it. So I was
that is some poetic irony there.
The biggest thing I'm really happy with is that every Civ has like 8 unique units, and that's what my big central focus was. Replay value for per faction.
That is a lot of unique units.
Yeah, it came out to be like 70-some-odd unique units.
Whoa.
And you've done art for all of them?
For a large majority of them. I'm not so good with fabricating tanks, so I pulled a lot of those from CFC, but pretty much all of the infantry units, for the most part, I did art for, and it was a lot of fun, too. Yeah, so, yeah, taking a little breather on the revolution. We'll still be uprising soon enough, I hope.
Derek Cale Paxton on the Civilization 4 mod Fall from Heaven.
Everybody that's on the team right now contributed tons before they were ever invited. There's only one person, Talcus, who was on the programming side that was ever invited that had never, as far as I know, never played Fall from Heaven before that, never posted in a Fall from Heaven thread. And the reason he was invited was about 3 months before the SDK was released public, Soren gave me a copy of it to try out and play with a little bit. And this was between Fall from Heaven 1 and Fall from Heaven 2. And the first thing I realized was this is way beyond my capabilities, and the things that I wanted to do in Fall from Heaven 2, I wasn't going to be able to do them. So I looked around the community, and I saw Talcus out there, and he was making these mod components that I don't think got as much appreciation as they deserve, because he was so far ahead of what anybody else was trying to do. We're still looking at Civilization 4 for being out for just a couple months at this point, and people were kind of tweaking, learning what all the values were and things, and he was out there designing a Python-only spell system and things that people wouldn't be looking to try to do for another 6 to 8 months. So I asked him, would you be interested in making a spell system for Fall from Heaven 2 and coming onto the team and kind of doing this? And he said, sure. And I talked to Soren, and Soren said I could go ahead and share the SDK with him early. So he got to be able to rip into it, and we got started, just he and I there, working for a while on what would later be Fall from Heaven 2 and getting it made. I've only had one person that I've invited that turned me down, and that was White Rabbit, who I invited way back because he was making such cool stuff. And a lot of the units that we use in the mod were made by him. So I invited him if you want to join the team, and he said, you know what, no, I love making stuff for you guys, and I love that you guys use it, but my real passion is ethnically diverse units, and I want to do that kind of work, so I'm not going to join the team, but I'll keep making fantasy stuff for you guys. It'll be fine. So I let that go for a little while until we got asked to work on Beyond the Sword, and everybody on the Fall from Heaven team had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So I went back to him at that point, and I said, hey, you know what? We'd really like to have you on the team, and if you're on the team, then you're going to have to sign this non-disclosure agreement with Firaxis. And that piqued his interest a little bit, and he agreed to join then, so.
Shall we move to the Senate?
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
A thread and a discussion that I can't even believe there is one about this, but here it is. Code of Laws technology is overrated. Apparently.
What?
Oizar says if you're not playing a leader that has the organized trait and are below monarch level, you don't need courthouses. You don't need it to help manage your economy because libraries, markets, and grocers will always be better for your commerce cities, quote-unquote, and that even at an above monarch, courthouses are, quote, a huge hammer investment for their return, unquote.
I think it's a good investment for 5 gold per turn.
Yeah, because you're going to be running a pretty high research rate a lot of the time. So all those money-producing improvements don't tend to make you that really much money when you really look at it. You can save a lot on your maintenance, especially if you have a very spread-out empire.
Yeah.
If you don't expand in a very nice round sphere with your capital right in the middle and everything is close, if you're really octopus-like, then you can get some really crappy distance maintenance on things, and you really need it.
And even just the regular maintenance is pretty hefty.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you really only want to found half a dozen cities or control in any way, whether you found them and conquered them.
Especially if you've gone on a giant reign of conquest and you've just suddenly doubled the size of your empire from it, and you really don't want to burn down all those cities.
Yeah.
Want to be greedy and keep them all. You need courthouses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem here is Oizar looks at the point of view of commerce cities. Yeah, in your high commerce city, then a market or a grocery is very efficient, and a courthouse does you relatively little good, but a courthouse is very strong in all other cities. The sum of all those cities, that adds up to more than what a single commerce city will give you.
And the espionage boost is nice in the outlying cities as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And don't forget the religion.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
If you can get there first.
And it helps you on your way to civil service, which is a hugely important tech.
Huge, yes.
It is a pretty important tech. I don't know if it's overrated, because I don't really follow the strategy forums all that closely, but it is pretty important.
A lot of the wars I play, I build about 3 or 4 cities that just produce units, and in those situations, courthouses seem a little useless, and it's hard to get to civil service with so specialized cities.
Yeah, well, it still saves you a lot on maintenance cap. If you're using those units to conquer cities, so you're going to need to lower your maintenance costs. So if you can find a gap somewhere, they do help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because where you've got maintenance problems, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure.
That's true. I also have this strategy where I take all my inexperienced units and just throw them at the walls of the enemy cities. That brings the maintenance down.
Yeah, that helps.
The only argument for Code of Law as an Eternal Courthouse is that I don't agree with, I guess maybe it's just my playing style or my difficulty level, I'm not sure, is because it opens up the caste system so you can hire merchants to sustain a flagging economy.
I never used it, that thing.
No.
I don't use it, but if you use the specialist economy, it's probably a useful civic, but I'm more of a cottage guy myself.
Mm-hmm.
Civics Choices for Space Race Victory. Norvin Green is looking for advice on what civics to adopt if you're going for one of these.
Well, obviously bureaucracy, so you can pump out those spaceship components in your capital, along with other cities. Whatever else is going to max out your industry.
Yeah.
I'd say state property, so you don't have to worry about maintenance or at all, you know?
If you don't have a good hammer corporation in your cities.
Yeah, but how many of the corporations are really that great for the space race victory? The amount you have to put in to building that corporation could better go to all the other things that are going to get you the space components later on. I mean, I know there's kind of an earlier phase where you do the corporation before you actually get to that stuff, but during that portion of the game is when you want to be building up your industry to really be able to pump out the components later on. You should build the ironworks.
Yeah, maybe.
Shit like that.
Universal suffrage is good, too, for the one hammer per town. It's a nice addition. Not great, but...
Yeah. Ken, you mentioned earlier bureaucracy. I could see bureaucracy later on in the race when it's becoming more about production as opposed to research. And that's assuming you have a strong capital city, which I hope you would have a strong capital city.
Yeah, hammer heavy capital.
Possibly organized religion if you don't need the research for, say, free religion instead. Depends on how your religion situation is, but that's definitely... something you want to consider.
I don't think organized helps with spaceship parts. I think those aren't those projects.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Instead of building.
But you may use it to get the buildings that are going to boost you later on, like your factory and stuff.
Oh, that's true.
We mentioned state property. If your empire wasn't very large, you might...
for the trade routes, pump up and get the research first to get there.
Caste system might help if you want to create a lot of specialists to help out with the building.
Get those great engineers and then pop the parts.
But... case system, it's merchants, artists, and
Yeah, yeah.
The scientist.
Yeah, no engineers.
No engineers.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, yeah, that's why it sucks.
That's why I don't use caste system. Oh.
Someone here, Invisible Stalk, he says you could switch to serfdom, but he says it's probably not worth the anarchy. Your production cities can probably keep up your research anyway.
Serfdom sucks. Serfdom is for to build improvements faster, right? That has nothing to do with the space race.
Well, maybe you can fast switch all your windmills to mines and perhaps wind workshops.
Yeah, if you're going to do a massive re-terraforming at the last minute of your cities.
Personally, I think that a spaceship victory is not so much a civic strategy, but a technology tree strategy and a city placement strategy when it comes down to it.
Mm. Yeah, because you're going to need at least 3 super production cities, essentially, to build everything. Or maybe if you want to spread it out really far and you, like, build one component every city, you're talking like a dozen cities. But
yeah, I actually do that usually. If I play a spaceship, I usually do that intensive builder empire where it's defensive and huge and giant.
Mad Scientist adds that players should also consider situations where you are playing certain leaders and traits. He mentions a few there. I'm not going to go into any specifically, but with Beyond the Slurred, you may also want to take into consideration unique buildings as well, because you can randomize leaders and civilizations in a game, but that's an even more situational consideration. I think Novi and Green was looking for generalized advice.
Yeah. I always thought the Russians' unique building should have given them better space production. Just gives them free scientists.
I thought it does.
Law.
Oh, really?
Well, but that helped, too.
Only a tiny bit at the very end. Well, it's a laboratory, but all laboratories give you more spaceship production. But their laboratory should give even more. Like, I think it's plus 50%. Theirs should give, like, plus 100% or something like that. That would have been more Russian.
Oh, and always, you know, the space elevator is a great strategy to pursue.
Yeah.
It's almost a prerequisite. I mean, if you're really in a competition with someone else, that'll usually make it or break it, who got that wonder. If you're just dancing, right, walking across the touchdown line, looking backwards and showing the ball and all that stuff, then you don't need it. But if it's going to be close, that's very important.
Yes.
And, like the UN, save an engineer for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. A golden age is good, too.
Yeah.
Perhaps save a couple of great people.
Golden ages might be worth it now and Beyond the Sword, but
not before.
Yep. Yeah. They reduced the number of great people at the start.
Yeah, 1 instead of 2.
Polyton University.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We do have that.
If people do want to learn how to play Civ better, there is a good way for competitive playing to have other people give you advice. That's the Polyton University.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Polyton.net.
Really?
Forums?
Wow. How can I figure that out?
I don't know.
Polyton University. Sometimes I wonder. From episode 20 with Dan Q, Locutus, Makalua, Imran Siddiqui, and Ian Oz Hodges, recorded on July 7th, 2007. Question from RJ Matt Sleepers. He says, I presume everyone would rather start with a scout than a warrior. Generally speaking, yes, but I think there are some exceptions. First of all, smaller and or more water maps, higher difficulty levels, and any combination of Montezuma, Tokugawa, or Isabella near me.
I'll take my warrior.
Well, I'll take the scout. It doesn't take that long to build a warrior.
Yeah, that's probably the thing. Warrior is easily built, and you don't need any decks for it.
And the only reason I like starting with a warrior is because I when I easily kill the kitties, I get my woodsman promotion, and I can move through forest fairly quickly, and there's a fair good amount of forest, generally, depending on the map type where you start. So the scouts always get destroyed by more powerful animals, like bears, and where a warrior could probably defeat a bear if he really fortified.
If you pick the right battlefield, it's okay. I always make sure that they attack me on a hill with a forest, and ideally from across a river, but that's, of course, not always possible.
That's definitely the best way to do it, fortified as well.
Probably a scout.
So I'm alone. I'm all alone in my warrior.
Well, because the scout, you can go and pop all those fun little goody huts, scout out the area, find a place for another city, and whereas with the warrior, you know, you don't get the one movement rate instead of a two is big hindrance, I think, in the beginning game.
Yes, I can see that definitely being a possibility, but I'm just going to mention very quickly to close the segment something Dan mentioned in an earlier podcast, which, of course, we all know I listen to. Dual maps.
He's the only one.
18 sieves. No holes barred. You need your warrior in that case.
Yeah, then you need the warrior. That's true.
From episode 11 with Dan Q, Locutus, Makalua, and Blake Walsh, recorded on March 17th, 2007.
So now next, I can't believe I mentioned pyramids. Most powerful wonder combos is, first of them is the pyramids and the great library. Because the pyramids are your representation, and for the great library you have two scientists to give a beaker bonus. So, and you can also use the engineer from the pyramids to plonk the great library, which can be very useful if you have no marble.
We're going to have controversy, because guess what's on my five worst list?
Bad Dan.
The pyramids?
It is. Now there's a reason. Yes, it is overpowered. I think it's overpowered, but even if you don't think it's overpowered, yes, it's powerful. But at the time that you can build it, it's too costly, as far as I'm concerned. 450 hammers?
You need stone.
Oh.
If you don't have stone, you just don't bother.
Yeah.
The other powerful combination is, of course, the Great Library and Colossus, which is for any map with lots of water. It means you pretty much win, because you have so much more comets than anyone else.
What else was on your five worst list, Dan?
Okay, let's hear about five worst now.
My next one on the list is Angkor Wat.
What? Yes.
Yeah, that's sort of... If you missed having something else to go in a great prophet city and you were trying to use that, but no, it's not that great. You're all right on that one.
Let's face it, if you're just like, you kind of happy for the refund because it's gold.
I have nothing else to build in this city until I research a couple more technologies. Oh, heck, I'll have them build Angkor Wat.
This is a bit useful for the, if you're a spiritual servant, have many temples and actually can run a lot of priests, it can be quite useful. But that's kind of rare, so.
Yeah.
And if you have specialist capability, you're not likely to use priests at this stage of the game.
It is fun to use it to generate a lot of profits, which then settle into a city, probably one through Wall Street and Ironworks. Like if you generate, like a dozen profits, and that's like 24 extra hammers and 100 extra gold or something, it's pretty nice.
And other reasons that I put Angkor Wat on this list is there are comparable and even better cultural boosters available at or near the same time, and it does become obsolete, so go away.
Relatively quickly it becomes obsolete, if I remember correctly. So.
Yeah, obsolete with computers, so...
No. Depends on how fast your research is going.
Considering you can, like, light bulb for a great scientist really early in the game, you can potentially have it root for a long time. But it is definitely one of the most situational wonders.
That's what we should rename Dan's list. The most situational wonders.
No, some of them are just bad, so let's get on to the additional ones.
So there's especially bad ones? Do you have some bad ones in there, Dan?
See if you get the bad ones, Greeks.
Pressure. All right, so we're now down to number... Now on to number 3 on my worst list, Hagia Sophia. Here's why. Benefit about the workers' building improvements 50% faster. Just go with the serfdom, labor civic. It's available to get through research at comparable times besides when you could build the Hagia Sophia. Again, you have comparable and even better culture boosters available at near at the same time. And I know there are people out there that are saying, but what about the great profit people points? Well, it's not on my best list, but I think a better choice than the Hagia Sophia for that would be the Spiral Minaret instead, where you get +1 gold from all state religion buildings, too.
Indeed, it's a bad one. And the reasons for that is, firstly, it goes obsolete very quickly, and on a tech which you really want to get, I think, a steam power.
Yeah.
You kind of do want to get steam power very quickly, because it's a powerful tech.
You don't want to delay steam power just for that.
From engineering to steam power can be not that long. Especially since it's going to take a while to get around to actually starting to build the thing, because it's not that high priority. I think it's also marble it's built faster with, which is a bit weird. Any of the other reasons, but by then you've probably ran out of work to do into replaceable parts, which is just for steam power. So yeah, it's a bad wonder.
Yeah, it's not. He's actually got a bad one on there. Oh, noes.
World has come to an end.
Apocalypse now.
Oh, I think number 4 on my list, if my memory serves me correctly, I think you, Blake, will agree with me with this one, the Kremlin.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think I've built the Kremlin once, just for the heck of it.
Just to say you did.
Used to be a lot of beast before they nerfed it. I mean, it was half-cost rushes. It was very useful, but It's now not quite so good, and it's kind of more balanced. And balanced on the side, we don't really bother. As artists.
Now it's balanced and boring.
Yeah. Sort of unbalanced.
Yeah. Looking from the artist booster effect there even. Again, comparable, even better boosters available to you, and it does become obsolete with fiber optics. So,
yeah.
What's the point?
Plus 2 great people points for artists. Ooh. I could run an artist and get that.
You don't really want artists that start to stage the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps this is another case for, I don't have anything else to build. I'll start building the Kremlin, but gosh, I hope someone beats me to it so I can get the gold.
Exactly.
Only 3 more turns till it's built. Let's take a few workers off some resource-producing tiles. There we go.
Quick, someone build it, please.
And finally, on my 5 worst list, Versailles.
What?
There's a reason why. My argument is this. The effects of Versailles can be reasonably obtained. Now, not perfectly, but they can be reasonably obtained with the national wonder of the Forbidden Palace. Again, with both of them, you've got the reduction in maintenance in nearby cities, and Forbidden Palace can give you 40% of the culture that Versailles can get, 40% of the culture benefit, and 50% with the Great Merchant people points.
Yeah, but Versailles is useful. A few times I've built on a really big map and had a fairly large empire. I've needed it for that the most newest section of it, usually. Or in some cases, I think I've seen other people actually even plan to build Versailles first and then go conquer on another continent and build a Forbidden Palace over there. So it has some use. It's not completely useless.
Main problems are so damn expensive. You kind of need it built as in a fairly new city to benefit from it, but it's not going to complete there in any same amount of time, so...
Yeah, that's why I think I saw the people building Versailles in their more homeland area as their Forbidden Palace there and building the Forbidden Palace elsewhere because it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah. So usually by then you just run state property if you want to get that effect, and then maintenance, and then it goes completely useless. It's obsolete for state property. So the thing I can't believe is you don't have the, was it the chicken itza? Not sure if that's how you say it, I think so though, with plus 25% defense.
Chicken pizza. Sorry, it's a mental nickname for me, so I remember how to pronounce it, chicken pizza.
Chicken pizza. It's a chicken pizza one. Plus 25 defense is not much. It doesn't really do anything.
And then it goes away with rifling.
Because they're just going to bomb guard it down in the same number of turns anyway.
Yeah, that just needs like maybe an extra catapult or two to get it down.
Well, no, it still takes the same number of turns.
Yeah.
It's 4 turns to blast down it with this, 4 turns without it. So what's the point? Better if it actually took it, made it take longer to bomb guard down the defences than it used to build it, but it is risen't. So it kind of replaced the pyramids, that wonder, and that list would be fairly good.
I can't believe that to remember the name of this Mackie, you think of chicken pizza. Can't believe you would insult chicken pizza that way. Now, come on.
It sounds the same, almost.
How insensitive can you be?
Yeah, the real one, the real life wonder is a lot cooler than the Civ 4 wonder.
Any others? Yes, no.
I tend to put 3 gorges on the worst list. You know, you want to put it on the best list because it comes too late and it's too expensive.
Well, most games that I've gotten a foreign game, I do end up building it. But then again, in most of those games, I've already had a pretty good lead anyway.
The thing is, coal plants are really, really cheap. They're only 150 hammers, which is cheaper than almost any other building and by that stage of the game. So maybe just put coal plants everywhere. And once you've done that, the 3 gorges is not so useful. It's just a bit of your health. It is useful occasionally, but a lot of the time it isn't.
Mailbag, thank you, Imran. I'm missing that. We got an email message, so it wasn't specifically directed to the show. I actually did reply to this person already, so... Because the likelihood that she may hear this on the show is probably kind of minimal, but hope springs eternal. I purchased a new laptop with the Windows Vista operating system and was disappointed to get an error loading font error code 28 when I tried to start Civ 3. Any help will be appreciated. Thank you. This message from Emily Humes.
No, hold on. I can give her help right now. Don't use Vista. Uh-oh, Microsoft's going to strike me down.
We recommend that you upgrade to XP.
Now, unfortunately, I'd like to be able to say that from my research, I was able to determine that it was Windows Vista was the problem, but apparently it could also happen for those on XP and in 2000, talking specifically about Civilization III Conquests. So I guess my question to Emily, is that the version of Civ 3 you're trying to run? What you want to do is go into the Conquests folder and then rename the file lsans.fot to anything else that you like, so long as it is not lsans.fot. You should now be able to run the game. You should be able to find Conquest under the following default directory structure on your system: Program Files, Infograms, Interactive, Civilization 3. This blog post, thunderpeel2001.blogspot.com. Now, I wasn't able to try this myself, as, of course, I'm running XP, but, again, it appears not to be an issue limited to those running Civ 3 on Vista systems. Based on a number of comments directly, it seems that this has worked for a number of others as well. Apparently, the reason for this is that within the lsans.fot file is instructions for Civilization to load the actual font file, which actually ends with the extension .ttf, from apparently hard-coded to look for the breakaway directory as a root directory on C under breakaway Civ 3 conquests lsans.ttf, and the file isn't there, so the game won't load. And, of course, this isn't even the default path for the game, so wondering why breakaway games should include this file with their patch. If you remember, Civilization Conquest was developed by both Firaxis and Breakaway Games.
I did not know that.
Yes. The only thing that this person said in this blog post that I had my head scratching about was, I wanted to post this on a Civ 3 forum somewhere, but I couldn't find an active thread about the problem, so at least here it should be for good. Hope it helps somebody. You know what, blog poster? If you have something you want to communicate and you don't see an active thread on it, you can start a thread of your own. Did you know that? You're welcome.
She was shy.
This blog poster, I mean, not Emily. Although the blog poster who posted the solution could very well be female. That's true.
Okay.
There are women on the internet, and there are girls who play Civ.
Woo!
Let's play Civ! If you thought an episode of Polycast was going to go by without that line, you were sorely mistaken.
Oh, thank goodness. I feel relieved now that I heard it. My wife plays Civ.
Oh, wife's playing Civ. From what I have read also about Civ 4, I've seen some confirmation that Civ 4 will run on the 64-bit version of Vista, but that with Vista specifically, you may need to, under an administrator account, set it to XP Service Pack 2 compatibility mode.
You know, it's funny you mention that. I'm running Windows XP Professional X64 Edition, so I'm running 64-bit XP, and while Civ runs great on it, it runs really great on it.
This month, Polycast celebrates its one-year anniversary. Woohoo! To celebrate that, we decided to give you a present by working extra hard to improve the show. We're conducting a survey in our forums to see what you like and don't like about the show, so we can use that to make it even better. Right now, we have polls going about our favorite host, favorite guest, and your preferred episode length. More polls like this will be posted in the future, so please vote and chime in on the discussion to let us know how to make your listening experience better. You can do this by going to polycast.apolyton.net and following the links in the survey section, or go to the Apolyton/community forum directly and find the relevant threads.
Call in today.
301-637-659, 301-637-POLY.
44-020-7871-7659, 44-020-7871-POLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
Log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolyton.net.
Advice on us start with Pudukai. What you want to do is you want to take her out on a nice date and some flowers.
Get to know her.
Know her. Ask her what she likes. Listen. Be a good communicator.
Step two, move on to the blouse. Oh, wait, that wasn't fairly friendly at all.
You have to remember that all girls want to be flattered, but they don't want you to be all the time around them, and you have to show them that you have some strength of character.
Yeah, or you can move to the blouse.
I really like the next thread title I just read ahead. It is a true statement, at least for Civ 4, Tokugawa is a bastard.
I like him, for some reason. He's mean. I want him to be my friend. But he doesn't like me. What can I do, you bastard?
Record date October 13th, 2007. Barbara Ann, clip by the Beach Boys, copyright Capitol Records. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization 4 Warlords and Beyond the Sword. Copyright 2007, Apolton Civilization site at apolton.net.